going for your first ever run around the park. Literally running errands all over town. Running for the finish line and your personal best. If you run, you're a runner. Find the shoes and clothes to run your way at newbalance.com/running. New Balance. Run your way.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 1979, TireRack.com has been helping people find the right tires for how, what, and where they drive. They sell only the best, like the full line of hand-cooked tires. Test results, ratings, and reviews are there to assist. Or try the Tire Decision Guide to get a personalized tire recommendation. Tires ship fast and free to you or to one of over 10,000 recommended installers. In many areas, they offer mobile tire installation. Shop hand-cooked tires at TireRack.com.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue. And you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Welcome, everyone, to another brand new episode of The Cocktail Hour, featuring Matt Harris and your host, Sam Snelling. We're here to talk all things whiskey. It's been a pretty popular topic so far. At least, you know, the one or two people that have tweeted feedback at us for these podcasts seem to enjoy it. So we're going to continue. Matt, welcome to the podcast. What's in your glass?
Water. So,
oh boo,
man, it was a 90 minute workout at the gym, and I need to rehydrate properly, so I am drinking the finest filtered water from a GE fridge and an Algin.
Matt's trying to get in shape for that forthcoming wedding.
Well I would just like to say I like to get in shape to live longer, so having a good respiratory and cardiovascular system seems to be a helpful thing given the current climate we're in, Sam. Making sure your lungs and the ability to move oxygen and blood through your body might be a good thing to have right now. So, wedding is an ancillary benefit. Surviving a pandemic might be the top line of concern. Or might be the top benefit of working out.
Well, so then what was the last good bourbon that you had?
Last good bourbon I had was probably 2 weeks ago at my father-in-law's, future father-in-law's, but I'll just call him father-in-law because it's easier. I had some of the Yellowstone Limited for the first time, and that was very, very tasty.
Nice.
Yeah. He had broken open a bottle because he has three of them, and he decided to just live a little bit and uncork one, and it was delicious. So if you can get your hands on that, do that. It was very satisfying. We're debating whether or not we want to open one of our Wellers right now, too. But we have a Four Roses small batch select that's currently open, so we're probably just going to finish that before we go to W.L. Weller Special Reserve. So that's probably the next nice bottle we'll enjoy here at Shea Harris.
I have dipped back into one of my more, I would say, consistent favorites, which is Belle Mead Special Reserve. So I don't know if people are familiar with the brand Belle Mead.
They're out of Nashville, I think, right?
But they're, yeah, the Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery is located in Nashville. And last August, me and my wife went there for a vacation, and and did a little tour, and it was fun. Got to try their what is now on shelves is the Nelson's Greenbrier Tennessee whiskey, which is like the original recipe for like the guys who found out that their grandfather, great grandfather, was like one of the top whiskey, like Tennessee whiskey distillers in Tennessee, and like rebuilt the distillery and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of a cool story. But in the meantime, while they were waiting for their own stuff to get of an appropriate age, they were sourcing product from MGP, which is, if you're a serious bourbon person, you probably know is a located in Indiana and does like a lot of really good sourcing.
I think it's over near Richmond.
Chances are if you...
I think it's near Richmond near us.
Yeah, like chances are if you're sourcing your whiskey from MGP, it's probably going to be pretty good. So they have their regular bourbon, which is honestly really good. And then they have their special reserve, which is like a barrel strength blend. It's a really, really nice bourbon. And so that's what I'm sipping tonight is a little barrel strength, getting things going. Pretty excited because we're actually going to talk recruiting, which is I know everybody's favorite topic, especially when it comes to recruiting guys that are 2 years away from even seeing the floor at Missouri. How exciting is that, Matt?
I'm excited to get caught up and watch film of most of these guys because that's always the. I think, you know, we're going to talk about some guys tonight who are all, like I said, they've got a couple of years to go here, and I think I've only watched film probably on about a third of the guys that they've talked to in 2022. I just got caught up on 2021, so I'm excited because it's more film to watch, but we'll I think have a good conversation kind of at a 30,000-foot view here. Before we really get into the weeds. Also because, you know, they haven't put out any offers. I think they only put one offer out last week, despite talking to all those guys. So I think it's you know, we're starting to see kind of maybe some initial kind of sketchings of what the pool might look like. But I think it'll be interesting to kind of see where the conversation goes.
Yeah, it was pretty apparent that they were looking at a lot of the more regional guys. They seem to, and I think it's to the benefit of the program that there is a really good depth within the 2022 class. Because, you know, Missouri can kind of ebb and flow in general, you know, and I think recent years have seen kind of St. Louis be a little bit higher, Kansas City not quite have the depth of talent, you know, and really the state relies a lot on those two areas with, you know, with sprinkling in of kids from, you know, Columbia and you know, maybe one here or there from Springfield. But for the most part, it tends to kind of be Kansas City or St. Louis. And there really hasn't been the kind of depth that I think we're looking at with this 2022 class. I think realistically, I mean, Missouri checked in on three guys just at CBC alone. And I think when you kind of take that into account that there's three guards at CBC and guys that I think will kind of end up in that range where you could realistically see Missouri recruiting them. You know, because I don't necessarily think that we have any of the guys in the state for that class that are going to be like a Jason Tatum or even a Caleb Love. Like, I just don't quite see that level of potential for a lot of those guys. So, I don't know if I'm stepping ahead of myself there, but that's just kind of where I see the class is a lot of really, really good players.
It was weird. It was interesting early on, at least through 18, 19, and 20, there was some talent on the west side of the state. You know, there are, I think of guys like Christian Bishop. I think of guys like Christian Braun and, you know, Christian Brown, I should say, Ojaya Badgey. There was some talent, I think, on the west side, but it seemed to break a little bit late. or it seemed to sort of come after Missouri had already sort of prioritized guys at other positions, or that they had already, you know, landed similar kind of players. So I think the West Side's produced some guys that are quality players. It's just, I think it's been a kind of a question of timing and of were there guys, you know, locally that were, you know, I think a little bit, that had a little bit higher ceiling. You know, if the question was, were you going to recruit, you know, Christian Braun or Cam Fletcher, you know, the answer was obvious. It was going to be Cam Fletcher. But I think you look at the West Side of the state, even in 2021, you've got a guy in Tamar Bates who we've talked about before. You go into 2022, there's Mark Mitchell, who's a five-star kid out of Bishop Miege, who's now 6'7 or 6'8, 210. Who's a wing, a legit wing. You've got Aiden Shaw, a 6'7 really long wing who plays for Blue Valley. So those are, and he, I think he's currently sitting at around 70th in arrivals ranking at this point. You continue on the west side of the state. You've even got some guys who aren't maybe ranked, but I think are really, but could eventually play their way into that sort of conversation, like a Jalen McDonald or a Taj Manning. Two combo forwards out of the Kansas City area. One plays at Sunrise Christian Academy. The other plays at Grandview. And even a guy that they're talking to, a wing in Braden Appelhans, who they reached out to, who plays at Blue Springs, is a guy that's worth kind of tracking. So I think it's the script has flipped a little bit in that there's more depth on the west side of the state this year. But I still think, you know, you look at a kid in Terrace Reed at Chaminade, and then as you talked about, three guys at CBC. Who are going to be, you know, quality prospects. You know, you could, I think most people, if you look at rankings, are going to look at Larry Hughes Jr. as kind of being the top one out of those three. But there's probably, what, 8 to 10 guys in the Kansas City and St. Louis metro area that you could all look at and say, yeah, those are legitimate high major prospects, which I don't know if we've had that in the past couple of years. So that's certainly heartening. And I think it makes it easier on the staff. I think we've talked about, you know, in 2021, you know, the depth across the class wasn't necessarily there. I know they've prioritized, you know, we know they've prioritized Anton Brookshire, and he's in the boat at this point. There's Yaya Keita, who's a borderline top 150 guy, who's kind of a post-combo forward one. There are two guys at St. Louis Christian Academy, Jaden Jones, but he's committed to Rutgers, and then Jordan Nesbitt, who's a wing, who reclassified out of 2020 into 2021 a couple of years ago. But that's really about it. You know, I don't know how you feel about classifying Aminu Muhammad out of Greenwood Lab as an in-state guy, but his roots track more to the East Coast, so I'm a little hesitant to include him as a legitimate in-state.
Oh, it's the same thing with Jones, yeah. Too. Yeah, I mean, Jones is originally from Dallas. Yeah, so, you know, like, it's one thing to have, like, a, you know, Kansas City kid, you know, grew up in Lee Summit or wherever, you know, and then another kid like Aminu Muhammad or Jane Jones who came to Missouri. Like, even though, like, the Porters were also kind of transplants. I mean, they spent a little more time, you know, because Pynchon had kind of been there for, I think, what, like 4 or 5 years by the time, you know, they were kind of, you know, hitting the heart of their high school years. You know, but really, like, realistically, those kids all kind of grew up in Indiana. You know, so it was really because of Pynchon that the Porters became, you know, considered a Missouri family. But, you know, realistically, like, Aminu Muhammad, the reason he's in Springfield is because his brother is at Missouri State. You know, the reason that Jaden Jones is in St. Louis is because his parents put him at a, you know, a prep school, to basically hopefully get a higher profile. Cause I think he was originally out at
he was at Prolific Prep and then came into,
that's out in California, yeah. Too.
So he went from, yeah, Dallas to California, then into, St. Louis Christian Academy last year. So, yeah. So, yeah. So really, if you're looking at true in-state guys in 2021, it would be Keita, Brookshire, Nesbitt, I think would probably be your true in-state guys. And if you want to rope Bates in there just over the state line in the Kansas City area, that's really sort of the extent of it, is four guys. that are true kind of regional prospects, that's doubled this year. So it's I think, to the benefit of this team and of the staff, and like I wrote in our piece last week, they've had to sort of go into enemy territory and really work the upper Midwest, you know, from Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, even to Northeast Ohio, to try and mine for talent. And that's just hard. That's, you know, you can do a great job, but, you know, Ohio State's probably going to be, the default contender for a guy like Malachi Branham. You know, we've talked about, you know, the Michigan guys and Brooks, Aikens, Bufkin, when you've got two really good Big Ten schools in that state. And even when you're trying to get into Wisconsin, you have, you know, Wisconsin and Marquette there. If you're in Minneapolis, you're trying to go up against Minnesota. So I think it's just harder to kind of really reach into those states. Now, maybe they could do it with a kid like David Joplin, out of Milwaukee, if they can, beat back Butler for him. But I think the one thing that we're driving at is the barriers to entry with a lot of these kids are lower in 2022 than they were in 2021. So I think that's some reason for optimism, is Missouri's not going to have to try and extend itself into other teams' home bases to try and dig out talent.
So I think the benefit is we have these players. We have guys like Rob Martin. You have guys like Larry Hughes Jr. You have Appelhans. There's also Jeremiah Talton. I think I made the joke that with Jeremiah Tillman moving on, it's time to look for another Jeremiah T. And you have Jeremiah Talton up in Quincy, who I think a lot of people are kind of projecting to sort of be a mid-major plus, to high major, guy. So that's another potential name. And if you're Missouri, in the way that, I think both you and I have kind of talked about how Missouri needs to be able to build, if they can put together like a really solid 2021 class and add a couple people maybe in the spring to supplement that, I think that allows them to kind of keep the necessary room to kind of start to build more classes with guys that are going to be able to step in and help and kind of get the program back to where I think we all want it to be, which is to be a more regular contender. And so I really think that, as much as I think there's a big importance on this upcoming season for Konzo Martin, I think people would probably be willing to have a little bit of a reset, moving to a bit of a younger roster the following year. But then I think you're kind of setting yourself up for a rebound. And that rebound would be like, this class of freshmen kind of coming in. So are there any guys that sort of stand out for you early that you're kind of wanting to make sure you're keeping an eye on? I know we kind of talked about it on Rock'em Nation a little bit, but I think kind of talking this out might be helpful.
I really like two of the combo guards that kind of looked at. I like Jalen Quinn's tape. I think he's a good guy that's got some good instincts, can play a little off the ball too. I watched a little bit of film on Julian Norris, a 6'3 combo guard out of Evansville Bossy in Southern Indiana. Kind of the same home territory as Drew Smith and where Chris Hollander used to work. He's an Evansville alum, used to be on Marty Simmons' staff. Really, really smooth player. And I think the one thing when you watch a guy like him on tape is, nice little burst, plays good pace, good control, can play off the ball, has a nice jumper. I think he's a guy who kind of fits the direction that their system's going with multiple ball handlers on the floor. I mentioned him in the piece, too. I really like Jalen McDonald, who a couple of years ago was pegged as kind of, I think, one of the next four or five really, really good guys out of Kansas City. Had some injury issues, moved on to Sunrise Christian Academy. He's 6'7", 205. His face-up game and kind of his his shot creation individually is coming along, but, man, he's got some length. He's got some athleticism to him. He plays really hard. He runs the floor hard. Active on the glass, can make some things happen from the elbow, good in the short corner. Half the cut-ups are him getting back screened and putting the ball down on a dude's head. So I think he's an interesting prospect to track. And I feel like Rob Martin, I'll have to go back and see if I can find more recent tape of him, but he strikes me as kind of a Yuri Collins kind of guy, where I think a lot of people are going to say, oh, he's 5'9", 5'10". But watch how he plays, watch his vision, watch his feel, and I think you're going to see a guy who, maybe despite his stature, is going to be a really good lead guard. So those are some of the guys that I'm really watching to see and who sort of evolves in this class. I think, you know, we're going to talk a lot about Aiden Shaw. We're going to talk about Terrace Reed. You know, depending on what happens and, you know, if Larry Hughes is open to, you know, other programs, or, you know, I think people are going to automatically assume he's a SLU guy, but we'll see what happens with his recruitment. But those are just some of the names that I'm really, really interested in are Quinn, Norris, and McDaniel. Those are kind of the three that really stand out to me.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, and I told you this the other day, of Quinn. So he's, I would consider him a regional guy. You know, he's actually from Illinois, closer to Champaign than you know, Missouri. But not far from where Chris Hollander sort of grew up. And so I think that there's a natural connection there. Missouri's already had him for an unofficial visit. And I think in a lot of ways, like, you talk about the kind of players that Konzo has sort of succeeded with, and I think that he sort of fits that bill. He's a bigger guard, which is actually one thing, like, you know, I think we've sort of noticed, like, Konzo really does like his guards to be a little bit taller, and that is one of the things I think that ended with them sort of moving on a little bit from Yuri Collins. Whether that was a good decision or not, it's why I'm interested to see sort of what happens with Rob Martin at CBC, just, you know, due to his size. But Quinn to me is just a guy, you know, you sort of talk a little bit about like a guy like, you know, Zeke Mayo and out of Lawrence, Kansas, 2021 kid, reminds you a lot of Drew Smith. And so if you're kind of looking for that, plays with good pace, uses angles, understands the game, high IQ kind of player, yeah, like, not a guy that's going to blow you away, not a guy that's going to, you know, like I think fans would kind of consider, you know, Xavier Pinson as a guy who can just sort of slice to the basket and, you know, occasionally kind of dunk the ball and stuff like that. And it's just like, you're not going to get that out of guys like this. You're going to get them, you know, using their body to kind of create space and getting to the kind of angle where they know they can make the shot, using the glass around the rim, you know, and even upwards of like, you know, 8 to 10 feet out, and, you know, being really, really smart with the ball. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of intrigued by him. I think he's a guy that certainly will project really well and be a really, really good college basketball player. But it'll be interesting to kind of track how he progresses, because I think one of the things that you sort of look for, I look for, are guys that are successful in multiple sports. And I think that when you look at Quinn, you know, one of the things that has maybe held him back a little bit is the fact that he plays more than one sport. He's not solely focused on basketball. And I think when you take a guy like that who is capable in a lot of different sports, and suddenly he puts his focus on one sport, you can really kind of see him blossom.
You see that this year too with a guy like Logan Landers in 2021, a guy who was a really good pitcher out of, you know, for his school in Wisconsin, and as soon as he focuses on basketball, he goes from being a three-star kid to moving into the top 150. You know, just a really skilled, polished, long guy. So once he puts his focus somewhere, he's going to, you know, blossom, sort of mature. So I think that's he'll be interesting to track. Like I said, Norris is kind of the same way, a little bit more athletic, a little bit better off on straight line drives, can create a little bit more downhill. But the one thing I like about him is that he is comfortable playing off the ball. He's comfortable moving off the ball, can get free, can come off down screens, can run AI cuts, can do some stuff off the ball to free himself up, which I think is nice. I think if you're going to have more of a lead guard out there, and you're going to have a guy who can, you know, feel comfortable sliding over and maybe having to create his own shot and work loose, I think that's always a positive thing to have. Other than that, I think some of these guys we're going to have to just dig into the film. Like, I haven't been able to see Taj Manning or Apple Hans. I've been wanting to watch Jason Green, a wing out of Omaha, who plays for Millard North there and is with Mokan, who I think is, who at least, you know, when you look at him in some brief, you know, cut-ups, looks really intriguing from a physical profile perspective. But the one thing I like here is that a lot of these guys have some length in them. They can play and they can slide between spots. So we've talked about before kind of positionless basketball, which I think is sort of a misnomer. I think what I sort of think about is what kind of flexibility do you have? Like Jalen Quinn or, you know, Julian Norris, both those guys can play the one or the two. You can slide them back and forth. A guy like Jason Green, you could slide between the three and the four. I think Terrace Reed is a guy who you could play in the five against small ball lineups, and you can move to the four against bigger groups. So I think that's really what we're talking about, is I think they found guys that can toggle between two positions, and you can really sort of give yourself flexibility there. The one thing I've really, really been impressed with is Terrace Reed's film. I think he's, you know, I compared his sort of production to other really, really good bigs coming out of St. Louis, and I think he's not quite on the same level as where a guy like Carter Gordon was as a sophomore, but I think he's going to get there pretty quickly. I think he could be a guy who's sitting, you know, right now, as I look at the recruiting rankings, he's around 79th. I think if his face-up game, if his, you know, ability to play in pick-and-pops improves and you see, you know, the ability to extend his range a bit, I think you're going to see his stock take off. He's already got a college-ready body. He can bury dudes on duck-ins. He's smart at making himself available in the short corner, runs the floor insanely hard, good hands in pick-and-rolls. If you can flesh out kind of the perimeter facets of his game, I think his stock's going to take off, and I think he's sort of the guy I look at in this class. And, you know, we've sort of talked before about Missouri's been trying to hunt for that elusive guy at the combo forward spot. To me, he's the guy that I'm really, really interested in this class. I think if he takes, you know, the steps that he's capable of, I think he's a guy that is sort of can be a fulcrum for them. So that's, you ask who I'm watching, that's really who I'm fascinated with, is, you know, out of Mitchell, Shaw, and Reed, I'm really, really fascinated to see how Reed develops.
I think when you look at sort of like the top three guys, you know, the guys that are already well accoladed and Missouri has had offers out for a while, you know, Reed is certainly the guy that maybe projects to be like a really, really highly productive college guy. I think you kind of compared him to Cartier, but maybe without the off the court issues.
I think people are going to go to Tyler Cook too, is where people are going to go to, just because of the Chaminade connection. And they trained.
I don't think the comparison to like EJ Liddell would be all that off either. I think, you know, that when you look at, now, I mean, EJ turned into just a monster of a high school player. But I think you're kind of thinking that, you know, Reed can become, you know, I think that level of production that I think EJ is going to have probably for the next 2 to 3 years at Ohio State. And I think that that's an easy comparison for me. You know, a guy that, you know, that has good size, has great length, has an expanding game, and a guy that can help you in a lot of different ways. If it's like you said, like if he becomes a guy who can consistently step out and knock shots down and kind of take bigger guys off the dribble, I mean, I will be shocked if he becomes that player. If Missouri can, you know, fight off all the the more higher regarded programs on you know, the East Coast or West Coast, or even like in the Big Ten,
Michigan State's already called him. So
yeah, like you can see him sort of taking off in a hurry there.
Yeah, he averaged 14.5 points per game, 8.3 rebounds, 1.1 assists, 1.5 steals, 1.2 blocks, a true shooting percentage of 63.7%, and a points per shot of 1.23. So that's efficient. When you compare that to, I think I'll pull it up here. When you look at, that's about in the same kind of ballparkish range as what Cartier did at Viani, so sophomore year. So that should give you an idea about what his trajectory is going to look like if he can continue to sort of evolve there. It'll be interesting to see what they sort of do with Shaw, who I think is who we're sort of more focused on. Mitchell is already getting calls from Duke, North Carolina, and Kentucky. So I think that just may be a case where you hope the early, you know, foundation you try to put in with him keeps you in the mix a little bit longer. But I sort of feel like Aiden Shaw is going to be the priority at the wing. And he's 6'7", still has a good enough frame to put weight on. I think you've watched more film of him than I have. So I was just sort of curious for your impressions of what you've thought of Shaw so far, or what sort of his game looks like at this point.
Well, he's still a guy who's kind of putting it all together. He has like the, you know, he's the physical specimen right now. I mean, as far as, you know, the shoulders, the arms, the way he moves, like he's still a little bit raw in pockets. But the thing that I always sort of look at, and I think is something that will always project, is your sort of shot motion. And he looks like a guy who could be a 40% three-point shooter at the college level. I mean, just a compact release. It's fluid. It's repeatable. You know, I think he's still kind of learning how to kind of play with the ball and sort of, you know, be a guy who can really attack off the bounce. But the things that will make him an impact guy as a freshman are already there. You know, like his ability to catch and shoot. He plays hard. He goes after the glass. It's kind of hard to tell when, you know, you're watching a clear Division I prospect, fight against the kids of Eastern Kansas, but for the most part, he looks like he plays pretty hard on defense, and I think all that will translate to a pretty immediate impact. The thing for me is like, what happens with the rounding out part of his game? You know, is he able to kind of take the next step and become, more ready to be ball dominant? And if he is, then, I think where he's sort of sitting right now, which is in that kind of 50 to 60 range in some marks, and I think as low as like 75, maybe in rivals, but that 50 to 75 range, I could see him sort of popping into like the 40s or the 30s and kind of being that guy that just sort of hits the right moment.
So I think that's that sort of leads into my next point, which is Missouri is in a position where, I don't want this to sound wrong, but guys play their way out of Missouri sort of range. You and I have talked about Caleb Love. The summer of 18, he was probably hanging around the upper 70s to low 80s. And then just through the month of May and into June, just took off. And, you know, you looked at his offers, then there weren't blue bloods, there weren't regional powers really calling him. Missouri had been in the door early, and, you know, I think Kansas may have been monitoring at that point, but you didn't start to see schools like, you know, Louisville or Indiana or North Carolina start moving in until after that summer on the grassroots circuit. And so really, at that point, once Love moved from being a guy in that 70 to 90 range to 30 to 40, just the caliber program that you have to fight off changes dramatically. And so, like right now, Missouri's not having to really contend with those battles at this point. Shaw and Reed have like been to Lawrence and they've taken on official visits there, but I don't think they have, but they don't have official offers from a school like Kansas. That would be the closest kind of blue blood I would think of. But like I said, last week, Michigan State reached out to Terrace Reed. If he's on the grassroots circuit this summer and, you know, tearing it up for MoCan Elite, is he starting to play his way into that kind of, you know, level of offer? So I think that's really the question here is, you know, you want guys to get better, but there's also sort of a point where you want that sort of progression to be slow enough too that you're not playing your way out of range so Missouri can have more time to cultivate a relationship with those guys. But the one thing that's heartening is, and that we said in the piece last week, is let's say that a guy like Reed plays himself into the top 30 or 40. Well, there's a really good guy in Jalen McDaniel, who's, I think, a guy who could grow into a top 150 kid. And he's at Sunrise Christian, which is a really, really good program. He's playing with really, really good talent out there. They do a fantastic job at player development and with strength and conditioning work. That's a prospect that, you know, a lot of people who saw him as a freshman thought this is going to be a top 100 talent. You know, if he can, you know, put together a string of healthy play, maybe that's a guy who you get in on the ground floor, you know, with Chris Hollander, and you could wind up getting a steal there, you know. So I think that's the sort of point we're at now, whereas, you know, those sort of backup, and I hate to say backup options, but those sort of secondary options, you know, didn't really exist in this class, and not to the degree of quality that we have right now. So I think that's going to be something that's interesting to monitor, is how guys' trajectories sort of play out and, you know, what that does to kind of further shape the board. Because Missouri only put out one offer last week. I think that's the other thing we need to talk about briefly, is I think they called 17 or 18 guys and they only extended one offer, and that was to Julian Phillips, a consensus, a guy who's probably a top 50 talent out of South Carolina, 6'7", 180-pound kind of wing combo forward. But that's the only offer that went out at this point. So the board itself, in terms of offers, hasn't even really changed all that much. We've just seen sort of who they're checking in on. So I think that's going to be the next sort of phase, is, okay, who's in that next wave of offers, so we can start to see what the board shakes out as.
Yeah, and I think obviously, like, the real key here is the reason that a lot of the offers haven't been extended yet is, and I'm sure the coaches have been, you know, forthright with the players, is they just want to see where they are.
And right now
there's been no off-campus recruiting, so you can't really see, if a guy has progressed the way that you had kind of hoped, you know. And, like, that's the thing, is even if a guy gets offered, you know, as a junior or a sophomore, it doesn't mean that he's going to be able to keep that offer as a senior. Based upon what the coaching staff was sort of projecting him and where they sort of wanted to see him by the time that they're ready to start taking commitments. And so I think this is probably true, like, throughout the country, is there's a lot of, you know, programs and recruits that are a little bit in holding patterns, particularly in that 2022 class, because, you know, this is going into a summer where those 2022 kids, a lot of them are going to be playing against, you know, 17U, teams on the circuit. And you start to be able to see them against kids that are a year up and obviously a little bit more college ready. So it's easier to sort of see, like, where guys are progressing and where maybe they're needing more work. And so at that point, you kind of know who might be a little bit more ready for the offer and who might not be. So I really think it's probably going to be until either recruiting opens up and we have more live periods, or even into the high school season this year, before you really start to see, Missouri start to extend those offers. And that's all saying, you know, if we even are able to play those games. Because it's one thing for colleges to be, you know, pressing forward and trying to get games going again. But I'm really, really interested to see sort of how high schools, you know, handle things kind of coming up, because it's a lot tougher to manage your players at the high school level and what they're doing, you know, outside of practice and games, than it is at the college level. Like, college level, you can kind of build a little bit of a bubble. But you cannot do that at the high school level.
If they talked about doing live periods in August and September, that might overlap with some maybe open gym time too for some prep for some high school. So I would sort of think late August to, like, into mid September is when you would see offers, if you were able to get in and see guys live and sort of up close and in person. But I think what you and I have stressed to each other is, like, this is, you can sort of see from 30,000 feet what the sort of positional needs are and sort of the profile of guys they're looking at. And I think, you know, unsurprisingly, wing is going to be a big need in this class. They're going to project to lose Torrance Watson and Javon Pickett coming out of They're going to need to find replacements for them. They're probably going to need to find a replacement at combo forward. And it's never a bad idea to try and find a post or a point guard to try and build depth at both of those spots. But wing looks like it's going to be the big need right now. And, you know, Shaw can grow into maybe a guy who can play downhill, but he's already a guy who can space the floor a little bit. They talked to Ty Rogers, who's a top 75 guy out of Michigan. But as always, that's going to be tough to pull him out. They've talked to Larry Hughes, as we mentioned earlier at CBC. That'll be interesting to sort of monitor what his recruitment is. He's a top 150 guy in Rivals and a top 100 guy in 247 right now. His teammate, Miguel Abdul Hamid, apologies if I butchered that, is also in the mix there. And then they've got, as you mentioned, Appelhans and Green. So a lot of guys on the list right there that I think they're going to have to try and sort out the pecking order after Mitchell and Shaw. So that's really what I'm interested in, is who's that, you know, who are those next two or three wings that Net offers for them? Because that's going to be a position of need in 2022.
Well, I think I'm talked out on 2022 recruiting.
Yeah, we've hopefully given you all a good primer, and when we actually see offers go out, we will, you know, have something more salient to talk about right now. But hopefully this has been a good kind of initial dipping of the toe into the water on that topic. But there's roster news right now, too, that's already happened. Our favorite Frenchman has said bon voyage to Colombia. That was terrible. I know it.
I see what you did there.
I write things, Sam. I'm not a comedian.
Yeah. Yeah, so Axel Okongo is no longer a part of the Missouri basketball program, which is an interesting development, in as much as I don't think going into this season, Missouri was expecting to get a lot from Axel. I certainly think that when they picked him up, it didn't really seem like a guy they were planning on getting a lot from, other than a big body to kind of defend the rim in practice. That was sort of what I thought they were getting, and that's what they got. And now, so now with like Jordan Wilmore hitting campus, you know, you have a big body to kind of lean on, Jeremiah Tillman. Yeah. And so I think Okongo is moving on. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't think he's a high major center. I think he's a guy you could probably go down and get decent minutes at you know, a mid-major like a Mac school. But I still like, I mean, he's just too raw of an offensive player to think you're going to get much more than just a guy who can defend the rim.
And that was the thing. Nobody was like, anyone who watched Okongo wasn't selling him as this hyper-skilled big. He was a rim runner, a rebounder, and a guy you could maybe lob the ball to on a pick and roll or dump to in the short corner. Like, there wasn't, I think if people were thinking, oh, maybe he'll grow into a guy who you can, you know, post up and play off him on the block, I think that was always, that always pegged him wrong. And so if that was sort of what you thought he could be, then that probably colors your opinion of his departure a little bit, or skews it a little bit in a way that I don't necessarily think fits. I think,
I mean, I don't think anybody's like surprised.
No, I don't think anyone's surprised that the 13th scholarship guy on the roster is moving out. Especially cause that's just the way things sort of operate now across the sport. If you're in the 11, 12 or 13 hole on a roster, and you know you're going into the back end of your career and minutes aren't looking plentiful, you know, you're going to move on. You're going to try and go find a spot. I don't know.
It's difficult also on both sides of this, you know, from a player perspective. You know, I tend to think, you know, in conversations with people sort of around college basketball, people that know Konzo Martin, he's pretty forthright in a lot of this stuff. So I'm sure like he does the thing that he always does, like, you know, like, minutes aren't given, you have to earn them, all that kind of stuff. And
but that was made clear on the front end, too.
Yeah, and, like, Okongo shows up and you know, has a run with the guys. Like, like it's one of those things, like, you know what competition you're playing at. You know, I've been on several college visits, and when you go on a college visit, like, you do play with the guys in the team. And so you know, like, pretty quickly where you fit in to the roster, you know, and you know, like, if you're going to be a guy that's probably going to be a starter, or a guy that's going to be coming off the bench, or a guy that's not going to play. Like, you just, like, you can tell, as long as you're an honest self-evaluator, and I think, you know, a lot of players are, that, you know, the odds are either long or they're short. And I think if you're Okongo, like, you have to understand, like, I don't think that there's any miscommunication with Okongo and the Mizzou coaching staff. Like, I think he knew coming in what was going to be expected of him. They were giving him a shot. He probably just needed a landing spot. You know, and what they got out of it, they got out of, you know, a big body could practice. And honestly, like, all reports are, he's a great kid. So, you know, kid, I think he's like 22 or 23. Yeah.
But I think I think there's the temptation to be like, oh man, another guy has moved on. There's been another churn, and oh, there's been, you know, every year it seems like guys are going. Oh, there's Christian Guest, there's KJ Santos, and you know, I always, you know, I think you have to look at the context for each kid's recruitment. Like you said, with Axel Okongo, they saw him at a JUCO showcase. There wasn't necessarily a great fit at his JUCO, but he had a great showcase. They brought him down. He fit in well in practice. They made it clear, you know, that he was going to have to really, you know, earn his minutes. They already had Reed on the roster. They had Tillman on the roster. You know, nothing was going to be, you know, sort of set in stone. There wasn't even like a real backup role there. Didn't really, you know, emerge this year. There was also some injury issues. Just didn't pan out. It was an opportunity for him to, you know, maybe come down, and it was a, you know, if he had, you know, grown into a guy who had been as productive as Reed, that's found money in that situation. You know, with Christian Guess, you know, they have Cullen Van Leer scholarship open now on a medical redshirt, on a medical retirement. And, you know, it's August, late August, September. There's a kid sitting out there who, you know, is a really good athlete, you know, kind of raw, had some academic stuff. Hey, we'll take a flyer on him, and if it pans out, it pans out. But, you know, we're not going to need Christian Guest to, like, give us 15 minutes a night as a freshman. KJ Santos. Well, KJ Santos.
Well, I'll also say, like, one of the things, and this is where it's kind of come back to bite the staff, is in a perfect world, you know, like, Michael Porter Jr. is healthy and Jonte Porter is healthy. Jeremiah Tillman
is healthy.
You know, Mark Smith, like, all these guys are healthy, and you're not
reaching deeper.
You're not getting down to the point where like, oh shit, like, Axel Okongo has to go play
at Kentucky
minutes in Rupp Arena. You're like, you know, but because you're down with you know, with some guys and injuries and, you know, and foul trouble, and all of a sudden you're calling on number 13. And so I think, like, that's where you can get into some legitimate criticism of the staff and the roster building. But I also think it's impossible to kind of project what happens with, like, the 11th, 12th, and 13th scholarship, and what those guys are going to give you. Because if you're good,
you're not going to need
and,
them.
And you should really only need 8 or 9 guys. And if those 8 or 9 guys are playing, then you have, like, 10 through 13 who aren't. And so, like, I, you know, it's one of these things, like, it's been tough for Mizzou because of the injuries. You know, but at the same time, like, there has to be some level of expectation that if you put a guy in scholarship, like, he has to be competent. He has to be able to play. And I think that that's where, you know, that's where I think it's fair to be critical of them taking a guy like Okongo, or a guy like Guess, or a guy like, and you're going to kind of go into Santos, which I think that Santos is more of a missed scout, you know, than where I think they knew what they were getting. Like, there's no way you could watch Axel Okongo and think, oh, that guy might beat Jeremiah Tillman out for minutes. Like, no, that's never going to happen. Right. Like, you could just watch him play and say, oh, you know, like, he needs a landing spot. We've got an open scholarship. He's a big dude. Good kid. Let's do it. You know, I think that's basically what the decision came down to. Now, I think the question becomes, now you have an open scholarship. You have a spot. You know, who's left on the market? Is there anybody out there? You know, we just saw Blake Hinson commit to Iowa State, which I think you kind of mentioned as being like a good fit for him. I would agree with that. You know, but there really aren't a whole lot of bodies out there right now.
I mean, I think people are going to go back to Oklahoma State transfer Yoane, but we haven't seen or heard anything that really makes us think that that's, you know, a potential option. But that would be one name that if you could somehow swing that, then I think you'd feel good about bringing him in, because, again, rim protector, rebounder, going to be able to score on dump-offs and putbacks, but going to give you some depth at that position, has 2 years of high major experience. If you could somehow finagle that, then I think you'd feel like that's a win. But honestly, I don't know where you go right now, because you can't have kids on visits. The transfer market has mostly dried up. I don't think it's going to get any better, because there's not immediate eligibility coming. You know, there's no mandate for first-time transfers to get immediate eligibility. So I just don't know where you're going to go in late June or July to, you know, find somebody right now. Now, maybe they could, like, you can't even go to a showcase, like, to find a JUCO kid to plug in. So my temptation would be to hold that, and maybe somebody shakes loose at the semester break. You know, maybe there was a kid who committed, and, you know, the circumstances, you know, that we've been through for the last couple of months, you know, made it a bad fit. They're looking to move on. Maybe you try and do that. But I don't think that there's any real pressing need to go out and hunt for that 13th scholarship. So I'm almost kind of inclined to say they should pocket it and see, you know, what they can find at the mid-year transfer market first. Or if there's a kid on the prep, you know, on the prep circuit that, you know, was undervalued and they can jump in on.
Yeah, I think that the likelihood of adding somebody is pretty low, but I mean, we've been proven wrong, you know, by Cons Martin before. There's, I mean, it is
three straight surprises. June. So
it's just for any staff that operates as much in the dark as they do, it is a little bit frustrating, because you know, I think we're kind of used to a level of access that you just don't get with Konzo, and even like the few sources that we do kind of have within the program, like, aren't really responsive 99% of the time, and even when they are, it's like, it's not very helpful.
But it is what it is. We wish Axel well, wherever his transatlantic voyage continues.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him.
I think he's got enough size. I think it, you know, like I said, a MAC school or an OVC school, something like at that level, he could find some minutes there, just because I don't think you're going to have many, you know, 7'3" guys just roaming around. So it'll be interesting to see where he winds up. Anything else you want to get to, or
I would like to say that I feel like tomorrow is July 4th. Because we have had fireworks in our neighborhood going off for what would be like the last 2 or 3 weeks. And I honestly don't know, like, it's throwing my cycle off, because usually it's like a couple weeks before the 4th where you will kind of hear one here and there, you know, and then it kind of heats up as you get closer to the 4th of July. We've been going on for like 2 or 3 weeks now, man. I'm thinking like the 4th is here, and it's not.
We've been mostly spared in our neighborhood. We've not had a ton of fireworks yet, but I'm anticipating that changes next week when we come back from visiting my parents. We'll come back to some overnight cannon fodder and cannon shots going off in Irvington.
Well, no, I don't have anything else we need to get to. I just want to get that off my chest. Any last drink recs before we get out of here?
No, not really. I mean, I feel like I've given you all the best advice I have recently.
If you spot E.H. Taylor barrel proof in the wild while you're out, you know, doing your bourbon shopping, kindly buy it, and I will reimburse you.
No, no, that's Matt's bottle. That's I'll send you a I'll send you a picture. Like, hey, look what I found! Isn't this great? Aren't you jealous that I have this in my collection now?
Actually, that would get a an offer of a trade for the stag.
I'd be happy if I had that instead of the stag, but alas. I doubt I'll be able to find any E.H. Taylor in the wild anytime soon.
Yeah, the barrel proof is particularly difficult to find. We're off for the next couple weeks. I hope everybody is enjoying and listening to the Before the Box Score. Those guys are doing a really nice job. Nate has been attending the Mizzou Zoom conferences and reporting on those. Doing a great job there as well. If you are enjoying the Rock'em Nation podcast, almost said Rock'em Radio, it's been a while, Rock'em Nation podcast, make sure that you're subscribed and tell your friends to subscribe. The more subscribers that we have, the better, because we like to share our, whatever you call this, Matt's musings about 2022 recruits. We like to share that with as many people as possible. So until, I guess, 2 weeks, we'll be at July 8th. That's exciting. Getting into July. I'm just delaying at this point.
You're keeping Perpetual Sunday going. We are out of here, guys. Follow Sam at Sam T. Snelling on Twitter. Follow
me. Actually, don't. I'm bleeding followers like a mother. All I'm doing is tweeting about COVID these days, so it's not particularly interesting.
Well, he just stepped all over that, but follow him anyway. Follow me at Matt J. Harris.
Follow Matt, he talks about basketball.
Follow me at Matt J. Harris 85. Read what we write, listen to what we ramble on about. Stay safe, and we will see you.